You're listening to a podcast on the Audio Boom Network. This is Walk the Talk with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. In these podcasts, I will be talking with people who share their stories of tragedy and hope. I will be exploring mental health and well-being with workplace professionals, and also with folk who have struggled to make sense of their own lives. My hope is that these shared experiences will remove the loneliness from those people who are convinced it is their fate to suffer alone. I'm Dave Thomas, and I've been a serving police officer for over 20 years. You're very welcome to join me on Walk the Talk. Ewan Sim first discovered mindfulness whilst at university, and it seemed a perfect partner to his interest in Buddhism. Over the years, he has taken additional training in yoga and hypnotherapy. In 2018, he was invited to the Houses of Parliament to take part in a parliamentary committee looking at well-being and mindfulness in the armed and emergency services. He is a busy response officer with Lancashire Constabulary and previously Greater Manchester Police. He regularly takes mindfulness sessions with colleagues in order to improve their own well-being. So who better than to discuss the subject and how it can assist all of us in our daily lives. I'm delighted to say he joins me now. Ewan Sim, welcome to Walk the Talk. Mindfulness has become popular in the last few years, but where did it originate from?
It kind of originated from, there's a Buddhist monk called Thich Nhat Hanh, who went to America in the 1960s, met up with a guy called Jon Kabat-Zinn. Jon Kabat-Zinn was kind of amazed about what Thich Nhat Hanh was talking about. It was quite interested in the Buddhist philosophy and the Buddhist meditation. Mm. So Jon Kabat-Zinn kind of took away all the kind of religious bits of Buddhism, kind of made it into a secular kind of meditation. So he took all the meditation practices out of Buddhism and made it into mindfulness as we know today. And it kind of turned into the 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course called MBSR, as we call it in the business. Okay. So they tried the 8-week MBSR course, tested it, did all the random control trials, and found out it actually worked quite well for relieving stress, improving sleep, improving cognitive abilities. Yeah, so it kind of came from that, from really. So, but before that, it came out of the Buddhist tradition. And as I've been watching a program on Buddha before you came, just to swat up, that came from the Buddha. Came 2,500 years ago, but then he came out of the Vedic traditions of the Ganges and North India. So it's meditation and mindfulness have been around for quite a long time, and mindfulness is the Western interpretation of meditation.
I was going to say, yeah, because it's not something that just happened in 1990 with your likes of Eckhart Tolle. As you say, it has been around for thousands of years, this.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. The way that mindfulness works is, on the 8-week course, you'll learn how to be aware of what your body's doing, begin to notice your breathing, begin to notice those really minute sensations within the body, just notice your thought patterns. And that's what MBSR basically is, a bit of mindful movement. And then you kind of look at how you can take your mindful practice off the mat, off the cushion, off the stool, and take it into your everyday life. So you'll do practice like notice times when you feel happy, or you feel things that are challenging you, and how to bring mindfulness into your everyday life, whether it's washing up, walking the dog, being aware of the sunshine outside, noticing noises. And that's the skill of mindfulness, is taking it off the mat.
Well, that very nicely brings us as to what is mindfulness and what it isn't.
Mindfulness, you'll build it over the 8-week course. You will build up. So the first kind of session is just being aware of just having a sit, being aware of noises, and begin to notice your thought patterns. And over the 8-week course, you kind of build up into being aware of working with the breath, mindful movement. Then you'll do actually watching the thoughts, and then towards the end of the course you'll have do a meditation practice where you don't really focus on anything and just aware of what's happening in your mind, just see how the thoughts arise and see how thoughts bubble up, how they come in one after the other. There is quite a lot of practice. Someone once said to me, it's mindfulness is a constant working practice. So not something at the end of the 8-week course, you suddenly become enlightened.
Yes.
You've got to take it from there. And a lot of the questions comes is, what happens after mindfulness? When you do your 8-week course,
then what?
Then what? Because some ways, mindfulness said, is not relaxation. Relaxation is an effect. So you do your practices, and relaxation, happiness comes as a result. It's quite a tough practice, to be quite honest, to be constantly aware of what's happening in your body, being constantly aware of your thinking and your body processes and your breathing. It's quite a bit of juggling, actually. It takes a bit of skill and a bit of art to it. I had to do 3 MBSR courses before I got it, before I understood how it actually works and how it would benefit me, because it's a tough going course.
And I suppose in this modern day age that we're always thinking, aren't we? We're overthinking all the time. It's 24-hour a day, 7 days a week culture, and it burns you out mentally, doesn't it?
Mindfulness allows you to be able to spot your patterns of thinking. So as I was took the dog on a walk today, I was thinking about what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. So instead of going out on this lovely, beautiful spring morning with a dog, walking through the countryside, I was thinking about what we're talking about today. And then you start going, oh, I'm not actually enjoying the walk. Yeah. I'm thinking about something else. So all mindfulness allows you to do is keep coming back to the moment and keep coming back to the moment, whether that's just noticing the breeze on your face, the sound of your shoes on the gravel, the sensation of your hips moving, being aware that the dog's been a bit of a nutter running around chasing squirrels. Mm. And it's just noticing the joy and being aware of the moment. Mm. And instead of having a little think about something, I used to call them internal rants. So instead of having a little internal rant about why your wife hasn't packed the dishwasher correctly, or why the dog's just weeding the hall, or why this, instead of having these internal rants, these internal conversations with yourself, you can go, actually, I've just spotted myself thinking now. I can stop. And I either can allow myself to carry on with the thinking, knowing that I've spotted it, or I can do some kind of practice to take myself out of the thinking, to bring myself back into the present moment in time.
And I suppose it's not just a case of trying to stop that thinking, it was just letting it be and let it float out of your head, I suppose.
My buddy's meditation teacher used to say, it's like you are a station master and you watch the train of thoughts come in and you watch the train of thoughts go out. Sometimes those thoughts are so juicy that you want to get on that train and just go with that train of thought. But sometimes you just watch the train of thought come in and you go, oh yeah, that's planning, remembering, thinking. And you can let the train of thought go out again without engaging with it, without giving it any energy. Like I said, sometimes you may want to get on the train of thought just because you can do. Or sometimes you got on the train of thought because you have no choice and it just takes you. That's what it's called in Buddhism. It's called a shempa or a hook. So if you're thinking about getting a brand new TV, you think, if I get this brand new TV, my life will change because I'll be able to watch Netflix, be able to watch Now TV, I'll be able to watch BBC iPlayer, and it's got a surround system, and it'll really change my life. And you have a really good think about how this TV is going to change your life, or the new car, or the new something. Those chain of thoughts are quite nice, and they're quite nice to be on. Or you're having a bit of a rant about someone, because sometimes you go, I'm really cross about what someone's done. Mm. So you have a little rant about something, and so that's you getting on that train of thought. But are those train of thoughts beneficial? Do train of thoughts get you in? Because all these trains are going to a destination, but if all our thinking arrived at a destination, we'd be quite happy. But all our train of thoughts, they don't get anywhere. It's just mental thrift, mental throth, that don't actually achieve anything. Mm. So all our mental thinking doesn't actually get anywhere. So that's why when you start spotting your thinking pattern, you start patterning, noting where the thoughts arise. If you keep having familiar thought patterns, you're thinking, well, are these thought patterns actually getting me to a place I need to get to? And if they're not, mindfulness allows you just to do something about it.
And the other thing about mindfulness is it's been about in the present moment. And they say that, you know, what's happened in the past has happened. There's nothing you can do about that. The future has not yet arrived, so there's no point worrying about that. And it's taking those anxieties away, isn't it? And as you say, it's just being in that moment.
It's often easier said than done, being in the moment, because we've all got personal histories. We've all got our little personal traumas and our personal experiences, and that shapes how we interpret the life. So I had once had a meditation teacher who said, Ewan, who are you? So when you spent a week, a month, a year looking at who you are, well, okay, I'm Ewan Sim. Well, who's Ewan Sim? Well, I'm a police officer, I've got four kids, I'm married. Well, okay, but who are you?
Yeah.
And then by the time you start stripping everything away, you start going, well, who the hell am I? And then you came to, why, well, it's you and who lives in this present moment, but then I've got all this personal history, and where do I go in the future? And it's quite easy to say, live in the moment, but it's quite hard to, you know, if you plan your career route, am I doing the right thing? Am I going in the right direction? And that experience comes from all your history. And if you've had been a history of being let down, all this type of stuff in the background, it's like an egg timer. So the you in the moment is the bit in the middle as the sand comes through, but you've got all this history behind you, all this history in front of you. So what do you do? How do you live in this moment? And it's a tricky balance. Like it's a work in progress. It needs looking at. And that's where I think there's some criticism of mindfulness about, some people have been calling it Mac mindfulness, where it's being kind of commodified and turning into profits. You know, you're turning your mindfulness into a successful business and turning your workers into, I say, compliant workers, because there's part of mindfulness that says accepting what's happening with you and not judging your experience. And when I first started mindfulness, I thought it meant I had to accept everything that happened to me without question. Yeah. That's just the way that it happened. But mindfulness is quite a powerful practice, especially if you take it past the 8-week course and start looking, well, what? Yeah, who is Ewan Sim? How is life fulfilled? How do I look for the future? And then you start looking at the ethics and morals that surround Buddhism or your own personal philosophy and start saying, well, actually, am I fulfilling those personal beliefs? Am I believing the ethics, the structure that goes around with the larger practice of Buddhism? You know, Buddhist talks about not harming people, not taking what doesn't belong to you. And especially when you come down to policing, we kind of, especially the non-harm, we are trained to use force at some point. And it's how do you use that in a force in a compassionate way? Mindfulness is only the start of it. It's only the introduction to how your life will unfold in the future and where you want to take it.
That very nicely brings me on to Ewan Sim. You've talked a little bit about yourself. What brought you to mindfulness?
People kept buying me Buddhist statues when I was at college, when I was 18 or 19. So I had all these little Buddhas knocking around the room. And I went, okay, so it looks quite good. Cause
why were they buying you statues, I have to ask?
I suppose because I was a bit of a hippie student, to quote this, you know, with the Indian sheets on the walls and stuff like that. And who's the guy that just threw the keyhole? Keith Lemon. Keith Lemon always talks about how other celebrities have, the more famous you are, the more Buddhist statues you have around the house. So I kept buying, people kept buying me Buddhist statues. And so a few years after that, I kind of went, I better work out what this is all about. I actually start going to some Buddhist and mindfulness classes in Manchester, at the Buddhist Centre in Manchester. It kind of evolved from there, really. So I started doing a lot of meditation. That evolved into doing some yoga. And then I've just done more and more yoga, more and more mindfulness. I've started going to, I was trained to be a hypnotherapist because I gave up through smoking through hypnotherapy. And I've trained in all these different types of stuff. It's kind of around mindfulness. And it comes out of philosophy of, for want of a better word, personal well-being, personal self-care, personal development. And I just found that it kind of really worked for me. Mindfulness really worked for me. A lot of the practices I do around yoga, around mindfulness, around trauma, it really fitted in with my own personal philosophy. In fact, my personal philosophy is that I wanted to change the world through mindfulness and through Buddhism and allow people to explore what I've felt through and what I've experienced through Buddhism. But as the Buddha would say, you've got to choose the middle way. You can't change the world all in one go. You have to take it one step at a time.
People that know you, how would they say, has Ewan Sim changed since he got into mindfulness?
I know this is going to sound really wishy-washy, but I've become a bit more caring for myself. I've always been concerned about other people, but it's more about looking after myself a bit more. And that sounds really selfish. In fact, when I started looking at Buddhism, I kind of stepped away from it for a long time, and meditation, and I put Buddhism and meditation together. I stepped away because I thought Buddhism was quite selfish, because it's all about taking yourself inward and that personal inward experience. But then I realised that the practice is about taking it out there and giving it to other people to experience as well.
Well, I mean, you know, you're a police officer, I'm a police officer, first responders. You only have to look at the burnout rates in our profession, and for exactly that reason, that people aren't being kind to themselves and aren't giving themselves the time to recover, I suppose.
Absolutely. Police officers are quite, well, because I deliver sessions to frontline officers, to staff, and people will normally, the first time I did this course, the first time I delivered a mindfulness session to police officers, they were half an hour late, so I thought, well, they're not turning up because I thought they don't want to come. So I was in a police station, Eccles in Salford, and I was in a side room and I could hear all these bobbies, street warriors, coming straight off the streets on the body armour. Yeah. And all I could hear was, what's this nonsense we're going to? They didn't say nonsense. And I kind of went, oh dear, tough crowd. And I found that if you explain mindfulness through a police officer experience, especially around how the nervous system works, about the fight or flight response, and how their experience will affect their nervous system and how mindfulness can benefit. If you approach mindfulness in a certain way, no matter how cynical or skeptical that bobby is when they first sit down, normally they will get some benefit out of it. After that first session in Eccles, I had 22 bobbies and 20 found some benefit out of that session. And I found that it's been consistent throughout. The comment I get is, I was skeptical, but because if you, as long as you approach people and approach people with a certain philosophy and a certain practice, they will normally get something out of it. Even if it's just a 5 minute of just calming the mind, calming the body, calming the nervous system, someone will normally find some kind of benefit out of doing a short practice. Where it's, I mean, I used to do a practice that was 40 minutes long. And for someone to, and that was the first introduction to mindfulness. It was a progressive muscle relaxation, which mindfulness teachers wouldn't call as mindfulness, but being acutely aware of what your body is. For first sit for 40 minutes long, it's quite a long sit. You can do a 5 minute practice, a 2 minute practice, and as long as you approach it in a certain way and meet people, bobbies, staff, where they are, and don't come in wearing hippie clothes with joss sticks and bean bags and whale music and that type of stuff. As long as you meet them where they are, they will normally go, actually, I do need a bit of help, actually. You know what? It was quite nice just to be able to take 5 minutes out of my day just to notice what was happening inside me.
As you've said, there is quite a bit of science behind it, really. I did a podcast with Noreen Tirani, a psychologist, and she explained to me how the brain works.
I do really have quite a mixed philosophy when it comes down to mindfulness. Like I said, I'm a hypnotherapist, I'm a yoga teacher, I do trauma therapies, and I'm quite into this. There's a theory called the polyvagal theory, which kind of maps out how people's nervous systems interpret the world. And when you start looking at the fight or flight system, when you start looking at how trauma starts affecting them, and you explain it, and when you start mapping it out over, I'm moving my hand as if it's a graph. So you kind of start off your day. So you're driving around in your Panda and someone says, Foxtrot 77, your ears perk up, and that's the fight or flight. That little bit of activation just kicking in. You're waiting for the next bit. And then you go on the blue light run, your fight or flight system kicks in. Then you go to the job, could work out quite well, or happened to me the other day, I nearly wet myself because someone came at me. And that's when you start mapping out how the fight or flight system works and how mindfulness at the end of your day can just calm that nervous system down and settle that nervous system down. Even if it's for a few minutes, you may go back out to it all over again, you may experience it all over again, but like this, like the science behind it is, it thickens the gray matter in your brain, which is, I think, to do with cognitive reasoning. It affects, improve your emotional balance, improve your sleep. In fact, there's just, if you put mindfulness with something else, well, mindfulness and cycling, mindful eating, there's normally some practice where there is a mindfulness to go with it. And there's lots of evidence to show that mindfulness is beneficial, can work, and is good for you.
That hypervigilance that that you mentioned when you're at work, which is potentially save your life. A lot of people, and certainly people with PTSD, don't they? They're always in that hypervigilant state. It just burns people out, and it's learning to come down from that.
Yeah, hypervigilance is just a constant state of being switched on all the time, being a constant alert to the threat and the danger that's around you. And instead of being able to come off that hypervigilance, you kind of, especially bobbies, and well, people puffing from complex trauma as well. If you come from a household full of domestic violence as a child, your nervous system doesn't know how to feel safe, so it's constantly switched on. And that can turn into hypervigilance, or sometimes you can go into hypovigilance where you are not aware of your body sensations at all because you just want to go, do you know what, I just want to switch off, I don't want to feel, because it's not the thoughts that causes emotional distress, it's the sensations in our body that causes the stress. So when you have that gut-wrenching experience, or when you're that gut instinct, or you're heartbroken, you know, you feel these in your body. You don't feel, it's not a cognitive reasoning, it's a physical sensation. And if we can learn to, if you can learn to bear them, whether just what's called tritate into them, just be able to lean into them just a little bit, dealing with discomfort, which another practice is dealing with discomfort, and just be able to touch it just slightly. You don't have to fully immerse yourself in it, just touch it, step away, and it's being able to tritate in and out of distress, of trauma, being able to sort of touch into that discomfort and be able to live with it and bear it.
So what are some of the things that we can do in our daily routines to become more mindful?
Go and sit on a cushion. First of all, go and find your nearest class and go and experience it and just say, this is rubbish, this is nonsense, I can't do it. Because the first time you go to a mindfulness practice, you'll go, I can't do this, I can't quiet my mind. And mindfulness isn't about quieting the mind, it's not about stilling the mind, it's just noticing how your mind works. And when you start noticing all your thought processes, so when you go to your first practice and go, I can't do this, my mind just racing all the time, that's fine. Because all you're doing, you just, instead of just that busy mind just going on at you all the time, you can start turning your attention, so you can actually start looking at that busy mind instead of being experiencing it. You can go, actually, do you know what? I have a really busy mind. I've noticed I keep thinking about the same things day in, day out. Where's my shoes? Where's my socks? And having those internal conversations. And when you start being able to spot those conversations, that's when you start being mindful. And it's not just physical sensations, it's emotional sensations. So if you have a sensation in your gut, you know, what's that all about? You know, emotions and things like that. So it's being able to spot what's happening inside you.
And they say, don't they, to concentrate on your breathing is to help you de-stress. But when you think a lot of medics will, at scenes of accidents or trauma, they will say to people, like, you know, just breathe.
Breathing is really good. Focused breathing exercise stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is a natural relaxant. You produce hormones called acetylcholine through the vagus nerve, which also produces oxytocin. So doing a focused breathing exercise, whether it's just being aware of the belly moving, or doing some 5 and 7 breaths where you breathe in for 5, breathe out for 7. So anything where there's a long exhale stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system. It makes us feel better. So just being able to tune in to notice what the breathing's up to, but also taking control of the breath as well.
Well, they say to do a lot of shouting because that automatically makes you breathe then, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've not heard that. But yes, I probably agree with that one as well. Get it all out of your system.
But so if I'm sat at my desk, you know, and I've had a busy week, is there any sort of little things that I can do just whilst I'm at my desk just to take the edge off things?
I would do there's a quite nice exercise. There's something called email apnea. So when you get in on Monday morning after a weekend off, there's that sensation where you open your emails and...
it's not just me then, it feels like that.
And the thing is, when you start checking your emails, you stop breathing because you're always waiting for that email, which is going, you need to do this, you need to do that, because one email can lead to 40 minutes worth of work, or an hour's work, or 2 hours work. So as you open your emails, just check the hand on the mouse. So just being feel, first of all, how that mouse hand feels on the mouse. You know, the fingertips are very sensitive, so maybe just check it in with how your fingertips are feeling onto the side of that mouse. Then maybe once you've done that, maybe check in with you sitting on the chair, being aware of the contact between your bum and the chair, feeling the weight of you sitting in the chair. Maybe checking out your feet, how are your feet feeling? Can you feel your feet against the shoes? Maybe the size of the shoes, bottom. Can you feel your socks? Are your feet hot or cold? Are they tingling? And then once you've done that, maybe to what can you hear? Normally in an office, there's normally lots of shouting and lots of banter and lots of cursing maybe, and the kettle going and people making bruises. And then once you've done that one, take it into breathing. Just notice the breathing, maybe first of all at the nostrils, maybe in the belly. Notice the belly breathing, and that is a really simple practice as you're doing it. And the good thing about it is no one knows you're doing it. So you don't have to sit there cross-legged with joysticks going and someone ringing some little tingly bells. You can do that all by yourself without anyone spotting you.
I think the point is, isn't it, that you don't have to be in a formal class to practice mindfulness. Anybody can do it anywhere, anytime.
And it's just taking you away from what's happening with your emails and what's happening in your outside world, and just looking at checking in with you to see how you're feeling.
But finally, what benefits have you experienced from mindfulness, and how have others found their experiences that you've dealt with?
The first time I really noticed that mindfulness was working for me is I was going down a driveway to a domestic. I could hear the shouting inside the house, and I kind of tuned inside me and went, I'm feeling fear. And it was just noticing, I was able to spot things quite clearly, what was happening inside me, especially the fight or flight response. It was like, oh, okay. Once I noticed that I was feeling scared and there's a bit of fear, it allowed me to deal with that situation a bit more kindly, a bit more compassionately, because instead of going in with my fear, I'd be able to spot my fear. So instead of reacting to their fear, I was able to sort of deal with the situation with equanimity. I was a bit more calm. Equanimity is like balance. So I don't have, there's no favoritism either way. I'm just spotting what's happening inside me. So when you go into the house, you go, okay, I'm dealing with other people compassionately with equanimity, and I'm not bringing any of my personal history with me when I'm dealing with that job. And if you've been to a few jobs that day, you know, that could be the fourth job of the day. And
patience is wearing thin, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You might have gone to a neighbour dispute where they're arguing about parking. You might have been to a sudden death. You might have been something else. So when you go to the next job, just being able to spot going, do you know what? I'm not feeling particularly good, or this is how I'm feeling. So you're not taking all your personal history into that house with you. And how do other people benefit? For me, it's like I said, I deal with mindfulness a slightly different way. I probably introduce a bit of yoga in there as well. There might be a bit of hypno in there as well. I find it's just being able to take the awareness to what's happening inside people. It might be a pleasant experience, it might be a neutral experience. Even I've had people come out of sessions going, I felt really angry after that. And it's just being able to notice the anger, the happiness, the joy, and it's just being able to spot what's happening inside you. And that's what I think is the benefit of mindfulness, is just noting what's happening inside you at this moment in time and just taking a few moments out of the day just for yourself.
Well, I've learned a lot of new words today. I know you're going to do a meditation for us in the next episode. But for now, Ewan Sim, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.